It's time for JT the Brick.
This is a Raider invasion of Southern California. I repeat, this is a Raider invasion of Southern California. So we get the Chargers coming off a 5-12 year. I repeat, because the last time we played them, we put 63 on their ass. 63 on their ass. Do you know anybody on God's green earth? Do you know anybody who said, I'm going to the window and bet the Chargers to win the Super Bowl? I don't. I know a lot of people. If you combined all the Charger fans in Southern California, you can fit them in my pool.
JT the Brick.
You hear this crap? They're saying, oh, the Raiders have this. They don't have anything. But the Chargers do. And it's the same jerks who say, I love the Chargers roster. Every year. You idiot. You know nothing about the Raiders. The Chargers, America's new bandwagon, had 5 wins last year. Lost Austin Eckler, Keenan Allen, and Mike Williams. I'm fighting off the Charger fans who think they're going to the Super Bowl.
And now,
63 on their ass.
Here's JT the Brick.
All right, we're back. Hour number 2 of the show from the flagship of the Silver and Black Raider Nation Radio. You can hear it live on the Raiders mobile app, and you can podcast it at lvsportsnetwork.com. As we continue on, we are going to get momentarily to our honorable mentions. We're down to our final 2. This one's a big one. We'll get to that. It's the Charger game where the Raiders broke the franchise record last year with 63 points. No doubt that was going to be on this list. There's other games that are more important in the history of the team as we're going on 60 years with this team. But this was one I wanted to get into the honorable mentions. We'll get into that in a little bit. Also, I want to get into soccer. The breaking news of what happened last night in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium for Copa America was wild. I got a good story to tell you about that. Asia Wilson on fire. She's going to win the MVP of the WNBA. We have the Home Run Derby tonight, and we have the All-Star Game coming up. There's, what'd they say, 37, Bobby, new All-Stars? 37 new All-Stars. Real quickly, as I recall this and remember this, if you're a great rookie, if you're a legendary rookie, like Ken Griffey Jr. or this kid Paul Skeens, you're an All-Star. If you come into the league, and it's the first 2 months of the year, you have a good April and May, and maybe a decent June, you're going to be an All-Star? That's a lot of new All-Stars, man. That's a lot of new All-Stars, man. The All-Star game back in the day, the National League lineup was set for like a decade. Henry Aaron, Willie Mays, Pete Rose. You know, you go down the list, it was the same guys. Then you watch the All-Star game. I remember, and I bring it up every year, and when I was a kid growing up in Long Island, New York, and my dad was my Little League coach, and I remember it was an East Coast thing because we had such bad weather. You know, in the summer. And I remember when the All-Star game was on, that was maybe my favorite night of the summer.
Yep.
We'd be out in the pool. Mom would have pizza, food. Friends from the neighborhood would come over. We'd watch the whole game. And I would sit there, big Yankee fan. Where's my guy? That's Thurman Munson. Oh, that's my guy. He's in the All-Star game for you, Fisk. And that, and the All-Star game was a rite of passage. The midsummer classic, and yep. To watch it, it was such a big part, Bobby, of my DNA growing up. I wouldn't Absolutely. Be here today behind the microphone if it wasn't part of my life watching that game.
Well, if you were a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, the All-Star game was a really big freaking
so
deal.
Big.
Because, I mean, you get home, and it started like 8 o'clock at night. They're like, just stay up and you can watch the game. You see all the All-Stars with all their uniforms. You could see Willie Mays in his Giants uniform. You could see Sutton in his Dodger uniform. I always thought that was the coolest thing.
Yeah. And they never played each other in interleague.
Exactly.
So it meant something. I wasn't a National League guy. I was an American League guy. And you're getting a chance to see a team that you didn't watch all year long. And the only time I would ever see those players was on This Week in Baseball with Mel Allen on the weekends. And you'd see those highlights.
Or the Saturday afternoon game with Kirk Gowdy. That was the only time you saw
him. Man, come on. Watching Don Mattingly hit right after George Brett or vice versa in an All-Star game. And it reminds me of one of the great moments with my dad in my life. 1999, Sports Fan Radio Network sent me to Boston. Maybe the greatest All-Star game since. That was the All-Star game
that,
with
that
Pedro.
Was a big one, yeah.
Pedro went up against Sosa and Maguire. Ted Williams came out to the mound. Tony Gwynn, may he rest in peace. Man, I remember that. So does anybody care about the baseball All-Star game? Because I know for a fact no one cares about the NBA All-Star game. Mm-hmm. And they canceled the NFL All-Star Game, which was used to be called the Pro Bowl. And there are some people talking about, George Kittle mentioned it, and others. We're going to an 18-game NFL schedule pretty soon, everybody. We're going to 18 games, which would be 2 bye weeks. And I did see someone float out How about having the All-Star game, the Pro Bowl, in the middle of the season? That's nonsense. No one's going to play in the middle of the season. And Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson aren't going to play in a Pro Bowl in the middle of the year and blow out their knees when their team's going to go to the playoffs. So none of that. The Pro Bowl has been destroyed. It's now you hit golf balls, long drive, and you play tic-tac-toe with a big foot. It's garbage. And we don't want to see that. The baseball All-Star game is great because every pitcher is throwing gas. And every hitter is going up against an elite pitcher. And it's hard enough to hit those pitchers in the regular season. In the All-Star game, it's pretty incredible. So that's coming up here, too, here. And again, I want to get to soccer. But before I get going, this would be a good time for you to jump in and keep it going here. We get back to our top games in Raider history as we approach the top 10. Here's another honorable mention.
We now present the Raiders' top 10 games of all time.
And the Raiders have won the Super Bowl championship. They are the world champs.
The history of the Raiders.
Fires for Bolitnikoff. He is going to get inside the bar. Touchdown!
The games that helped make the Raiders one of the most recognized franchises in NFL history.
Just win, baby.
The Raiders' top 10 games of all time begins now. Honorable mention.
All right, we continue with an honorable mention. Less than a year ago, just a few months ago, the Las Vegas Raiders 63, the Los Angeles Chargers 21, December 14th, 2023. The all-time scoring record for the Raiders, dating back to Oakland, Los Angeles, back to Oakland and Vegas. And man, does this game will stay with me the rest of my existence. Because on that Sunday, before that game on Thursday night, the Raiders lost 3-0. Pretty much the season was over. And if you go watch the Netflix series Receivers, they'll tell you it was over because the Raiders had a chance. God, if we could have won that game. Being right there for the 3-0 loss was one of the most brutal, brutal days I've ever had being a radio host for the Raiders. I was in shock. Walking around Allegiant Stadium, heading to the postgame show, as the Raiders needed that win. And if they would have won that game, I predicted, and I mean it still, they would have made the playoffs. That game would have got them in the playoffs because their momentum was rolling at that time, and they couldn't get anything going. The Las Vegas Raiders, on the following Thursday night, just a few days away, make an historic moment, a victory against the Los Angeles Chargers, winning with a record-setting score of 63-21. The game took place again on Thursday Night Football at Allegiant Stadium after being shut out in the previous game by the Vikings. The Raiders' offense came alive. They scored 9 total touchdowns, including 3 in the first 3 drives and 6 in the final half alone. Quarterback Aiden O'Connell had an impressive performance, throwing for 4 passing touchdowns in the first 2 quarters. The Raiders dominated from the start, building a 42-0 lead at halftime. This halftime led to the largest lead in franchise history and tied for the second largest halftime lead in NFL history. The second highest differential in the history of this league, dating back to leather helmets at the half, 42-0. That's just incredible when you look at that. Overall, 8 different players found the end zone, showcasing the team's depth and versatility. The Raiders' defense played a crucial role in the victory. They forced a 3-and-out, recorded 2 fumbles, and kept the Chargers scoreless in the first half. Additionally, the defense contributed 2 touchdowns on their own. Setting up the offense for success. The Raiders' explosive offense, balanced attack, and dominant defense led to their historic 63-21 victory over the LA Chargers. This makes honorable mention in our all-time greatest games in Raider history. We start off with Zamir White. Remember, no Josh Jacobs with the injury. Zeus on the ground.
O'Connell under center. Zamir White, the tailback, gets the handoff. Trying the left side. Touchdown! Zamir White bulldozes his way in for his first career touchdown, and the Raiders take an opening drive score. It's 6-0 with 8:10 to go in the first.
Jason Horowitz on all these calls. How about that? First career touchdown for Zamir White in a record-setting game here. Malcolm Kuntz was coming into his own at this point in time in the season. Kuntz takes over with the sack.
Snap, looking right, pump fakes, pressure off the edge. Kuntz has it, ball's out on the turf, and it's at the 42, and it looks like the Raiders have it, and they do! Malcolm Kuntz with a strip sack, and the Raiders with Tyree Wilson on top of the football have a takeaway in Chargers territory.
Oh, I love hearing that again. Kuntz and Tyree Wilson involved. We're going to need some more of that this year. This was the game I thought when Trey Tucker played his best game. Clearly the numbers show that. Trey Tucker and O'Connell, a good weapon, a 1-2 punch.
O'Connell on first down, going to throw. He's got all day. Lobs it to the end zone. Open receiver. Tucker bobbles it. It looked like he bobbled it on first glance in the back right corner. He caught it. He flips. Raiders in control here in the first.
Yeah, Raiders in total control. Jason Horowitz on all these calls again. And Jacoby Myers with Aiden O'Connell. This was another big connection in this game. I hope this leads to more success this season.
There's the snap. He's going to throw. Lobs it near side. Looking for Myers. Leaps and grabs. Jacoby Myers. Touchdown.
Yeah, first quarter, 21-0 with the extra point. Tillery had a sack in this game. And what about Michael Mayer, the guy I call his name more than anybody? I think I do. I've been saying, where is Michael Mayer? Get the ball to Michael Mayer. Let Big Mike out of Notre Dame make some plays.
Second and 8 from the 12. O'Connell, play action. He rolls out to the right. He's got a wide open tight end. Mayer at the 10, 5. He walks into the right pylon. Touchdown, Raiders. Right on cue. They take advantage of another takeaway, and they are blitzing the Chargers here on Thursday night.
They were blitzing them. Bolden had a run for a 35-0 lead in the second quarter. But then the milestone, most points ever in the half by the Silver and Black. You knew the night was going to be special. O'Connell once again to Tucker.
We got Trey Tucker split out to the right. Carter goes in motion. O'Connell's going to throw on first down. Throws over the middle. Deep into the end zone. It's caught! Touchdown, Trey Tucker! He was coming across the goal line, and the rookie has his second touchdown of the half, and the Raiders have 41 in the first 30 minutes.
41 in the first 30 minutes of the game. 42 with the extra point that came through, and that's the number that needs to be set. So let's pause for a second and find out what we learned in this game. This was a game where Boy Blunder got fired, okay? So they were going to get rid of their coach, no doubt about it. Also, Tom Telesco got let go. We picked up Tom Telesco here. Tom's done, I think, a really good job taking this roster and advancing it. But that was an important game because there the Raiders humiliated the Chargers. They beat them and humiliated them. And this is the same Charger team that we're dealing with again, right? This is less than a few months ago. This happened in December. We're sitting here in July, and no one played any football. The last I looked, no one played any football since January. And all of a sudden, the Chargers are supposed to be. This is the Charger team that we last saw. Okay? The Charger team that we last saw, you're hearing this. How much better are they going to be? Okay, I think they're going to be better. They got a hell of a head coach in Jim Harbaugh. They got a good head coach. But how much better is that roster going to be? How much better? We'll get a chance to see if the Chargers can improve that much. Tip your cap to them if they can get it done. We move to the third quarter where Devontae didn't have a big game, but this game was on the Netflix series receiver, and Devontae was in a big mood after this.
Jacoby Myers in motion. O'Connell takes the snap, throws it out to him. He's going to throw to the end zone. Touchdown, Devontae! They went backwards, and Jacoby threw it forwards, and it's 48-0 here early in the third.
Little trickeration. Can we see more of that, please? We know Jacoby can catch. He can throw. Threw a touchdown to Devontae. Can we see more of that, Luke Getsy? Can we see possibly that with Brock Bowers? Brock Bowers getting a handoff and throwing. I don't know. I want to see Brock Bowers make some big plays. Then maybe the biggest play of the year when you see Jack Jones and this interception, and it went viral all over the world. This was one of the most athletic plays in Raider history.
Will Clapp has been their starting center since, and now it's their backup, Brendan Hymus, who is in at center. And an interception on the first pass!
Amazing.
It's Jack Jones!
Amazing.
It's a pick
Amazing.
Six. Lake and Knott breaks the record.
Amazing.
The highest point total in Raiders franchise history is Jack Jones on an interception for a touchdown.
No matter whatever happens to Jack Jones, I hope he's a Raider for life. He'll never top that play. I mean, that play will live forever in Raider history. Not only did it break the all-time record for scoring, but it was one of the most athletic plays we've ever seen from a Raider defender. And that's why Jack Jones has that job. He's got that job now with Antonio Pierce. He's got to keep it. He's got to stay healthy. He's got to stay there. He's got to be a team leader. He's got to be a really high-character guy, considering his past stops here, and come in and play great. I have confidence that he's going to be able to do it. What a play that was. As we get to the final call, this is an honorable mention, ladies and gentlemen, today as we look back at the greatest Raider games of all time.
As the clock hits zero, the Raiders walk onto Allegiant Field and set the franchise record, 63 points tonight in their largest ever win over the Chargers, 63-21 here tonight on Thursday Night Football.
How do you go from getting shut out to the Vikings 3-0 and put that up? I don't know. I think here's the key. They played loose. The season was over after the Minnesota game. They kept playing like there was something to play for. And, of course, there was something to play for. They're professionals. But imagine that locker room after getting shut out, going home and saying you got to be back to work on a short week and we got to play another game against our rival. And the Raiders answered the bell. Very important point. The point I'm trying to make here, the reason why this was so big, other than the fact that they broke the scoring record, was it came after hitting rock bottom against Minnesota. And look, they already hit rock bottom and fired Josh McDaniels with some pretty poor performances. This one was lower than that. They got shut out at home. Unacceptable. But Antonio Pierce had him ready to play. And he's going to need to do that this year because the Raiders are going to lose games this year and they're going to have to bounce back. And Antonio Pierce is going to have to be the guy to get him to do that. Here's Coach Pierce after the game when mentioning how balanced the offense was as it was still attacking downfield.
Really, like I've been saying, every week that's the plan. It's just young quarterback got to let it go. And then tonight he did. Second play of the game, boom, we took a shot. Yeah, it wasn't completed, but that kind of set the tone. And you can see what we're going to do the rest of the game. And then obviously there's more opportunities later in the game. But listen, we got a lot of skilled players that we know, and it just takes confidence, man. I wish we could do it day one. I wish we could just draw it up, and it's that easy. But obviously it took us six games to do it, and hopefully that's a part of us going forward the rest of the year.
That's a very important point by Antonio Pierce. They took a shot early. Raider Mort always told me that back in the day in the black hole and in the parking lot. Take a shot early. If it's incomplete, no big deal. Let's take a shot. Luke Getsy and this offense this year, open up and throw it deep to Trey Tucker. If it's incomplete, set the tone with the defense and the defensive coordinator that you're going to attack downfield. And that was a very important point. They missed on the deep attack early, but they ended up breaking the franchise record for scoring. That was great. Antonio Pierce talked about the milestone last December.
Well, we knew it at halftime what the record was. I was made aware of it. And we were going to be aggressive regardless what the score was. If we only had 21 or 10, we were going to be aggressive. That was our mindset. I talked to our team about it last week, playing better in the second half. I thought we did. This one was playing, you know, full second half and not letting off on the gas pedal. And you know, hats off to them because that was their mindset.
Man, I remember that post-game show, hosting it from the Modelo Cantina Lounge, where fans were just high-fiving me walking by. And there were some Charger fans there. I remember a Charger fan had a Charger blazer on. It was a blazer, powder blue with the Charger logo all over it. He came right up to me, and I took my headset off, and he said, "Great win, JT, for the Raiders. They sure did put it on us." And I remember that. I said that on the air. It was a great win for the Raiders. It was a character win, which, you know, building character is really important. And I hope that momentum from last year moves into this year because the going got rough and the Raiders showed up just a few nights later. Now that's going to go down in Raider history. It didn't make our top 10. It wasn't close to making the top 10. But it was an important game that we had to chronicle here. And finally, Antonio Pierce was asked, especially in the second half, why'd they run up the score and bury the Chargers so badly?
No, listen, at the end of the day, it was all sportsmanship. And, you know, but at the end of the day, listen, when you just scored zero, I ain't going to stop them boys from scoring. I'm not going to stop them. You know, we was on the other side of it last week, and it felt a certain way. And, you know, no apologies here. Sorry.
All right. So that no apologies there. You learned a lot about the coach. Coach said, "I'm not apologizing for anything. We scored 0 points, and we're going to go out there and score, and he wasn't going to slow the boys down. So there we go. One more honorable mention. We'll tell you what that's going to be tomorrow. We'll tell you about that there, and then we'll move on and go from there. But it's nice that we were able to include the Derek Carr game in New Orleans. Remember the opener in New Orleans where they went for two, Jack Del Rio went for two, and they ended up coming through and winning that game. We wanted to throw a couple of modern games in here because overall, when you look at the history, Bobby, of the Raiders, and you look at the history of the team, most of it's in the 60s and 70s. The greatest games are in the 70s and some into the 80s and 90s and the Gannon era. But we don't have a lot of time, man. We're picking 10 games. So the honorable mentions are just as big as those games that we're going to put in the top 10. Raiders 66 contributes to the show. We greatly appreciate it. Go ahead, buddy. You're on.
Hey, JT. How you doing today?
Doing well, thanks.
Great. Yeah, I had actually this game as my number 10 on my list. Mm-hmm. And for the things that you pointed out, it came on the heels of a lackluster shutout to a Vikings team that we should have beaten. And then it showed the resilience of the team that was led by AP, and it showed the domination that the Raiders were known for in those 60s and 70s and 80s. And it just showed what they are capable of. And you know, putting up a number like that is just crazy.
Yeah.
It was a whole team effort. As you said, 8 different players scored, and I think that's a Raider record also in that game. And just a side note, I was looking at the Raider site today, and the 65th anniversary logo they got. Kudos to whoever came up with that. I like it. It's got the L and V for Las Vegas, but everything symbolizes something. It's got the LV and then the cross swords in the middle, signifying L for 50, X for 10, and V for 5. And the L and the X, the 60 years they spent in California between Oakland and L.A., and the V for 5 years they've been in Vegas. Very good job. You know those people.
Yep.
Tell them that they did a great job with the logo. But, yeah, that was my number 10 game, and I just love the countdown, JT. Keep it up. Thank you for everything you do.
Thank you, 66. Appreciate it. And, yes, I was going to get to that. The Raiders unveiled their 65th anniversary logo, and it is pretty cool. As he just mentioned, 66, it's got the L, the X, and the V. But go see it on your own. I can't do it justice. But the X in the middle is two swords that are crossing, and it looks pretty cool. The Raiders established in 1960 and now 2024 for 65 seasons coming up here. And the LX, tribute to the 60 years that the Raiders played in Oakland and Los Angeles. Right, so I like the logo overall. I think they did a really nice job. It's clean. It's really clean. And it makes a lot of sense here. And you know, if you look at the back end of the logo there, it's got a lot of cool things from California to Nevada. That's a cool hat. I'm sure the hats are going to look great. So that's another honorable mention. And if Raider 66 likes what we're doing, then I know we're doing it right. Because we're trying to get people to learn about the history of the team. That was a big game. I wish every game was like that, man. Wish every game was like that. And then the following week, I interview the coach. We do Raiders Roundtable, and I have a week of taking calls on 63 points. It's not going to happen every week. All right. A lot of work went into this from Bobby grabbing all the sound. We got one more game. One more game tomorrow in our honorable mentions. There's probably 3 or 4 honorable mentions we could have went, but we want to time this right and keep it moving as we head to Costa Mesa. We're brought to you by Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers, the best. One love. Have you back as we continue here Monday on the flagship of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM, and the Raiders mobile app. A lot to get to today. Yesterday, the weekend was chaos on social media. When I get up today, it was one of the rare times, because I get up before the stock market. I'm a former stockbroker, blah, blah, blah. I'm in the stock market every day with either trades or positions that I have, or just to look. What's the stock trading at? So I like to get up, and if I'm going to do something, I like to do it before the market opens. So think about it. So I'm up, not every day, but most days early. So I turn my phone on. My kids are at home. They're safe. When they're on the road, want to turn on your phone from overnight, see if anything happened. I have elderly parents who are in great shape. You look at your phone when you wake up. I looked at my social media today, and it was absolute chaos because of the assassination attempt, which we're not talking about. I keep it. I stick to sports. I can mention something in passing like a lot of hosts do today. So I open up my feed on Facebook and Twitter X, and I look at it. And in about 5 minutes, I just got out of it. It was just chaos. Everything that I was looking at was a conspiracy theory or this or anger or fear or chaos. And I think if you look at that a lot, if you look at it every day, because I stick to sports on the show, you know that. I stick to sports. For seconds, I might tell you about something outside of sports, but I got a clock in my head. I don't need anybody to remind you. I know when I'm on sports radio and when I'm in commercial or I'm not on radio. I know the difference in my job of talking sports and what I do. But today, getting back to it, I open up my phone, and it's just horrific to see all of the negativity and chaos around the world. You have something that happened outside of Pittsburgh, which is so tragic and in such a big story, and it knocks Ukraine off of the entire news feed, knocks it off, it knocks the border off, it knocks everything off of your news feed. Everything disappears, right? Some things that you're looking at, and you see Gaza, what's happening, humanitarian, it's gone because of one issue now that takes over your news feed. But the one other thing that I saw in sports today I wanted to mention on that was equal to the chaos was the soccer event last night that took place in Miami at Hard Rock Stadium, the Copa America final between Colombia and Argentina. I am fascinated by this topic, and as much as I feel tied to talk Raiders every segment or I want to talk about different sports, this is what I want to talk about today because I think we could all agree on what's happening with this with crowd control. You've been to events in your life. You've been into events in your life in sports that have been uncomfortable. I don't know if it was a football game, a basketball game, a soccer game, whatever it is. Try to take a moment here and connect with me on the all-time event that you went to in sports, concerts, whatever it was. Could be on the Strip in Vegas where you were in a crowd control situation that got out of control. Do you have that in the back of your head? Do you have that moment? So I'll go first and tell you what it is for me, and I'll tie it into the soccer game last night, which I saw play out in real time, and I was tweeting about it because it was concerning to me. I could see as Fox was pushing back the soccer game last night on Big Fox in prime time on Sunday night. That's a big deal. And Fox got huge ratings for the European Championship as Spain beat England, and they were going to get huge ratings because Messi is playing for Argentina in the Copa final, massive ratings because of Messi alone. But as I was watching it in real time, I noticed I turn it on and they're saying Rob Stone and the host, Alexi Lawless, and they're doing what normally happens in an airport. You know when you go to an airport and your flight's delayed and the gal or the guy who's there at your gate gets on the microphone and says, your flight's going to be delayed, our new takeoff time is, and they give you 20 minutes. And then they come back on after 20 minutes and say, oh, to give you an update, we won't be leaving for another half hour. And I always look at my wife, and my wife thinks I'm a lunatic at an airport when this happens. She thinks I'm a lunatic. She wants to get up and walk away. I look at her all the time, and I say they're lying. They're not telling the truth. They don't know when the plane's going to take off. They're just telling you something and a lie. They should say nothing, first off. And then the second thing they should say is, we're in a ground delay. Our crew isn't here. There's weather-related issues. We'll get back to you when we, quote, air quote, know something. They never do that. Pilots, when they pull up and you land and they're taxiing to the gate and they stop, say, hey, there's a plane in front of us. We should be at the gate in 5 minutes. No, you don't know if it's going to be 5 minutes, and sometimes it's a half hour. So getting back to the soccer game last night, Fox is saying, well, the game's now a half an hour late. Now the game's an hour late. So instead of waiting on real media, which is Big Fox, real media, I went to Twitter, Elon Musk's ex, because I knew I would get my information faster than I can from Fox Soccer. And as I'm looking at the chaos at Hard Rock Stadium, where we've been with the Raiders several times,
I noticed that it was really dangerous and alarming that the Colombian fans the night before showed up in record numbers to see this game. And they showed up and partied the night before, and no one noticed. No one noticed that there were thousands of Colombia fans, more than Argentina fans there. And then before the gates opened, they bum-rushed the gates. And thousands of fans reportedly, not hundreds, over 1,000 fans reportedly broke through and breached the gates and security there. And a lot of the people who are working those security gates are great people, but they're grandmothers, grandfathers. They're not there to stop 200 people that are running right towards them to break the barrier and get in. And then I was looking at it in real time, and I got on Twitter and I said, this is chaos. And then I saw the video, which I tweeted out. You can see it on my Twitter feed. They had fans, Colombia fans, that broke in through the stadium. Broke in. They didn't have a ticket. They came there to get into the stadium without a ticket. Raise your hand and beep your horn if you've ever done that. Once they got through the gates and pushed people aside and bum-rushed them, they were climbing into the air conditioning vents. This is a bleeping NFL stadium. Imagine we're at Allegiant Stadium, which is much newer and the security's better. People were trying to breach and get in, and then they get in and they're climbing. You're walking around Allegiant Stadium and they're climbing through the air vents. That's exactly what happened last night in Miami. So I knew in real time that there were going to be more fans than there were in seats. To give credit to the local police, because this turned into a police matter last night, the police, when the game started going into aisles and asking for tickets, and those who didn't have tickets, they escorted them out. But I don't know how you could do that in a giant football stadium. I mean, the game's on for so long. And there was a lot of pushing and violence. And then I saw a couple of little kids, dads with their little daughters, moms with their little boys and girls that were crying because they were knocked to the ground. They were intimidated. There were people with tickets once the stadium was breached who weren't allowed in because it became a police scenario. And then after the game, when Colombia lost, before I went to bed, I tweeted out, this is the job of local police to get all those fans out of there safe. Because Colombia lost. And remember, Colombia broke into that stadium. Yeah, they broke in. They illegally broke in to that stadium without tickets. They took it over en masse. And they lost. So I said, man, I don't know if these Colombia people are tough and rough, but if you're a fan of Argentina, you want to get out of there. If you had kids, if I was sitting at that game last night and I had a six-year-old daughter, I would have been out of that game with 10 minutes to go because of the chaos that was there. So that to me was really important because we are all connected through sports and concerts and music and crowds. And it could be at a political rally where the crowds get out of control. It could be anywhere. So let me quickly give you my story about the biggest crowd scenario I ever was in my life that I should have died at. Should have died. I was in a situation where I thought I was going to die. I went to Shea Stadium on October 13th, 1982. I repeat the date because it stayed with me forever. Shea Stadium, where the Mets and Jets played at the time, to see the Clash open for the Who. Live at Shea Stadium, The Clash, and that was October 13th, 1982. So let me do a little storytelling time with you because I think it's going to be good content because of this crowd last night, and I'll tie it into the soccer game. So at that time in my life, I'm in 11th grade, and I graduated high school when I was 17. I went to college when I was 17. So at that time, do the math. You know, I'm a 16-year-old. And I don't know how my parents let me go to this. My parents were pretty strict. I mentioned my dad, pretty strict guy. Only son, two younger sisters. I don't know how my dad let me go, but I was really into music. And about 12 of my friends, we got tickets to this concert. I have the ticket stub at my house. And I think we went in because it was a stadium concert. And it was general admission on the field. So we took the train from Massapequa, Long Island, where I lived, with about 10 of my friends, including me, 10 or 11 of us, got on the train, young, drinking. You know, back then it was a different world. Sorry, it was a different world. And we take the train, and we end up taking the train, and we get into the stop in Flushing where the stadium is. And my friends get out. And I remember one of my buddies, a guy by the name of Mike Coppola, say, hey, man, after the show, for any reason, if we get separated, let's meet here at this train track. at roughly this time. I didn't think of anything when he said it. What are you talking about? We're all going into the concert together. We're all going to leave together. So we get out there, and the show, we walk in. The gates are closed. We have tickets. They're $10 seats. And I'll never forget this moment when the gates opened outside of Shea Stadium, and people were running to get in because it was general admission on the field. And I walk out. We weren't running, but 10 of our guys walked out, and we came around the old giant mixing board where the speakers were. So we couldn't see the stage. And when we came around it, we saw the stage, and we were one of the first people there. I'm telling you, we were one of the first of the 300, 400 people in. And people were running to go to the first row. And one of my other buddies said, no, we're not going to go to the first row. Let's get to the first row and walk about 30 feet back. And my buddies are like, why? We can be in the first row. He said, no, this is not going to be smart. We got to be away from that. That's where it's going to be crowded. He was right. So we're about 30 rows back standing. There's no seats. It's general admission. And all of a sudden, David Johansen, Buster Poindexter, was the opening act. And then it was going to go into The Clash and The Who. And Buster Poindexter, David Johansen does this set, and The Clash are going to come on next, and The Clash were late. And The Clash didn't come on for about a half an hour when they were going to start. And the crowd started moving back and forth really bad. And I noticed my feet weren't under me anymore. My feet were moving, and it was like a football game. When I put my elbows up over the crowd, I was having a tough time breathing. And I said, this is chaos. And I couldn't go anywhere behind me. I couldn't go to the left. I couldn't go to the right. It was horrific. It was horrifying because when the crowd was swaying like a wave, if anybody fell to the ground, they weren't going to get up again. You would have been suffocated or stampeded. It was crazy. So long story short, The Clash finally come out. And in that first song, the wave of people moving to the front and the chaos, I found my way without my friends to the front row, and literally I was drenched in sweat and really fearing for myself at this time because there was no way out of it. I put my arm up, and one of the roadies took me and pulled me over the barrier and pulled me over and dropped me, and it was about a 10-foot drop. It wasn't a 3-foot drop. I remember falling down on my shoulder, and I came on, and I was on the other side of the stage, and I look up, and The Clash is performing. And it was one of the memories I'll never have forget of this is I walked to the side of the stage, and Pete Townsend was there with his guitar, just fiddling with it, warming up, watching The Clash. And anyway, I basically came out of that and went to the back of the floor and never saw my friends again. And that happened to two or three of my other friends. And then at the end of the night, after seeing The Who and everything was great, went back to that train station where the 10 or 11 of us, there were two of us. We were worried. There was no cell phones. Remember, no internet, no such thing as a cell phone on God's green earth. No way to communicate other than maybe a payphone on the train tracks. Get on the train, I head home, and got to the train and called my dad, and my dad picked me up. And I feared for my life in that crowd. So I'm bringing up that story because last night, there were a lot of people that were fearing for themselves, not at that level, but in their own mind, when the chaos broke out at Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. That was a complete failure. That's an NFL stadium. The house of the Miami Dolphins. That would never happen in the NFL. Say the Dolphins are playing the Ravens. You're going to have 2,000 Raven fans without tickets breaking down the gates and going in and climbing through, you know, air vents. Of course not. But it could happen at a soccer game. So last night was a scary moment on American soil. And we had a scary weekend, period, when it came to the political environment. Then you tune in and people around the world are watching America. Everyone in the world was watching that soccer game. And they had to delay it for over an hour because the front of the stadium was breached by fans who didn't have tickets and just pushed their way in and took it over. Incredible. That can only happen in the sport of soccer. It's not going to happen in MLB. It's not going to happen in the NBA. It's not going to happen anywhere other than a concert, a music festival, or a soccer game. So there's a lot of chaos going on in South Florida today. They were talking about, I just saw the comment that was put out before the show by Hard Rock Stadium as they're pointing fingers and thanking the police for what happened there yesterday, all of that. It was absolute chaos. England fans last night when they lost, England lost to Spain in England, not where the game was played in Berlin, were beating the hell out of each other, their own fans, after they lost the game. I love soccer for that reason of passion and intensity, not the violence, but it's part of the sport, the chaos of how those fans can move in a position where they can move thousands of people all over the world, some good, some bad, some hooligans, some fans who just want to get into the game and they have no money and they don't have a ticket and they're going to do that. And we saw that on American soil last night in Miami to wrap up Copa America. It was an epic fail for that region of South Florida and Miami for that football stadium. And I think Allegiant Stadium would have did a far better job because it's more modern, it's brand new. I'm not saying guaranteed, but I think knowing the people at Allegiant and the cameras and everything, they would have had it worked out with Metro a little bit better. But the World Cup's coming to the United States in 2 years, and they're going to go back to Miami and a whole bunch of other venues, and the security will be the tightest it's ever been in North American sports history. I got a little Clash in, London Calling, the Clash opening up for the Who, and a little behind the scenes of what I think of soccer crowds. And always be safe and always help other people when it's chaos like that. And protect yourself when you go to big events. Keep your head on a swivel. I can't stop looking at all the videos from last night at Copa America. And most of it is very uncomfortable, but the type of videos you can't look away. 702-365-9200. We are brought to you by the DiCastroVerde Law Group. That felt like a lawyer segment, didn't it? If you get into an accident and you're injured, call the DiCastroVerde brothers. Brothers win. The brothers have your back. 702-222-9999. You get right in touch with them. Put them in your phone. Alex Orlando DiCastroVerde. I hope you don't need them, but if you're ever going to need them, they're my guys, and they'll do their best to fight for you. The DiCastroVerde Law Group, proud partners of us. Right here as we continue on Raider Nation Radio.
So the dead cap for the Raiders this year is $40 million.
If they traded him.
Yeah. No. So somehow they would have to work this out. I'm hearing that this is going to happen, if it does happen, somewhere in late August, early September.
Really?
Yeah, and the cap hit for him is $25 million.
Why would it take that long?
I'm not sure about why it would take that long. But Devontae's never going to come out publicly and say, I want to leave the Raiders. But you do hear in this wide receiver program where he does this, I got to get out of here before I get killed. I mean, he says that, you know, and that leads you to believe, leads the viewer to believe that he wants out of Oakland. But I don't see him saying that publicly.
So that's Boomer Esiason making a lot of Raider news today. JT, back with you. Hey, we're brought to you by Tequila Commissario, the Ferrari of tequilas. And they're going to help us as we're coming out their way to Costa Mesa for Raiders training camp. A portion of Raiders training camp, our coverage every day will be brought to you by Tequila Commissario. Their reserve tequila is the best I've ever had. The people who come to my house sip it in my backyard. My wife, when she makes it in a cocktail, people are saying, what is this? Tequila Commissario, the agave. All of their brands are fantastic, and I'm telling you, if you go to their website at Tequila Commissario, you'll see this. I got connected through them, through the Maloofs, who I've known for well over 20 years. I trust the Maloofs. They're real tight with me over the years. They've done a lot for my career. When you try Tequila Commissario, it will change your life as a tequila drinker. Proud partner of our show as we take it on the road to Costa Mesa. I see myself sitting outside. I'll bring a bottle or two of Tequila Commissario, and I'll be sipping it with my friends at the evening hours, not before my show, but well after the show, in the cool weather of Costa Mesa, where the Raiders are heading out for training camp. Tequila Commissario, proud partner of our show. Love it. So the Devontae stuff again, it's out there.
It's New York. It's the number one media market. You say something in New York, it's going to have legs. It's going to have legs, and I don't think there's any legs to it. When there's rumors, look, if I'm getting, if I'm hearing something about Devontae getting moved to the Jets, you'll hear it from me first in that building. I'll be around that enough that I'll sense something. But again, I don't want to get involved with Devontae's money. This is a financial move, and I think Devontae is really happy here. Well, I've been wrong. You point out when I'm wrong every day out there in Raider Nation. You know, I'm not Nostradamus, Bricktradamus. There's some things that are right in front of me. I don't see it. Normally I do. I see Devontae being a Raider. How many years? I don't know. But the way this is setting up, it'd be nice if the Raiders had a non-dramatic, healthy training camp, and Devontae got the ball a lot, and Brock Bowers got the ball a lot. I just can't wait to see Zamir White every day. I want to see how big this guy is and those biceps and how huge he could be. Home Run Derby tonight, 8 Eastern. I'm heading down to Wynn, where I am every Monday night. The residency, as they call it, will be a lot of fun. Wynn at the SiriusXM Studios, 4 to 7. Q's on deck. He's got a big show, big lineup. It's out there. Go listen, and I will see you back here on Wednesday. CCon tomorrow at Virgin, our proud partner. Happy to be a part of that. Have a great rest of the day, everyone.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.